6 o'clock, let's get this meeting started. I'm Steve Flinders, the chair. I represent the Dixie and Fish Lake National Forests. Appreciate everybody coming out tonight. I'm going to recognize Jake Albright from the Wildlife Board. And how about the RAC introduce themselves? We'll start on my left with Brian.
Hello. Oh, Brian Johnson. I represent non-consumptives.
Sam Carpenter. I represent sportsmen. I'm from Kanab.
Dave Black, St. George, represent at-large.
Rusty Aiken from Cedar City Agriculture.
My name is Doug Messerly. I'm regional supervisor with the Division of Wildlife Resources out of Cedar City. Myself and my staff act as executive secretary of this committee, but we don't vote.
Mike Staley, Delta area. I'm at large.
I'm Claire Woodbury from Hurricane. I represent the public at large.
I'm Cordell Pearson from Circleville. I represent at large.
Lane Torgerson from Richfield. I'm a sportsman's representative.
Dale Bagley from Marysville. I represent an elected official.
Thank you. In the way of meeting order tonight, we'll have a presentation from the Division of Wildlife. I ask you to be respectful and let the division proceed through the presentation. We'll go by agenda item. We'll then, after the presentation, I'll ask for questions from the RAC. We'll proceed to questions from the public. I ask you to keep those to questions. We'll follow that up by a comment period from the public where you can give us your point of view. We'd love to hear it. Limit groups to 5 minutes, individuals to three. Please fill out a comment card available on the table out back, or raise your hand. Out front. Some going around the room. Hand them to a Division of Wildlife person. They'll get them up front. We'll then proceed to comments from the RAC and motions and voting. Unless there's any questions, look for approval of the agenda and motion on the minutes from last meeting. Anybody?
I'd like to make the motion to approve the minutes and the agenda.
Motion by Rusty for the minutes and the agenda, seconded by Cordell. All in favor? Unanimous. In the way of a Wildlife Board update, if you recall, the last meeting was fishing proclamation. Not very controversial. Our motions were all unanimous. The Wildlife Board passed things the same way that we did. There was a little bit of, for lack of a better word, controversy between the RAC meeting and the Wildlife Board meeting relative to Panguitch Lake. I think there's always going to be a tug of war between bait fishing, trophy fishing, family recreation. Since no one came to the RAC meeting, the Wildlife Board was hesitant to make any changes and dismissed it as just that, you know, more discussions, and thought to stay on the course. Regional update, Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to keep this brief in the interest of time, as we may get into some lengthy discussions this evening. First of all, it's the time of year when our biologists and conservation officers are out classifying deer to get that important data and determine how much production we've had during the summer and what the remaining buck-to-doe ratio is. Which, as you know, and as we'll discuss further tonight, is a key piece of information. You know, I'd like to invite specifically the RAC members and frankly, any other interested members of the community that would be interested in accompanying us on some of those forays to let us know. We'll be doing that over the next few weeks. If you'll contact me or your local conservation officer, we can probably arrange to make that happen. So that would work out good. Landowner turkey permits application period is in process for those that are applying for turkeys next year. Stephanie and I were trying to recall specific dates for the general turkey application period. I believe it's in December, so it's coming up soon. And we'll get to talk about it more at our next RAC meeting, which is in early December. Fall fishing has been good on some of our waters, and don't forget that. Right up to ice up, it's a good time to get out there and catch those fish. They're trying to get fat before the winter. They know what's coming, as we do. So, anyway, that's, and unless there's any questions, Mr. Chairman, I'll leave it at that.
I have one question. Doug, when's the sportsman's permit application period? You know? Stephanie, do you know? Isn't it right now? Remember an 8th?
Yeah, it's November 1st, and I'm not sure what the deadline is, but it's the 23rd, yeah. So it's
so a little tickler for folks to check out that application.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Doug? Seeing none, let's move on to our first action item. Bucks, bulls, and once-in-a-lifetime season dates and application timeline. Anise.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, RAC members. Okay, I'll be presenting the bucks and bulls once-in-a-lifetime season dates. We'll start with the mule deer season dates. As you know, this coming year, 2012, will be the first year where we'll have our general season units on a unit-by-unit basis. There's been a lot of information on that on our website, so I will leave it to that. If you have particular questions later, please feel free to ask them. But we've got the maps up. Obviously, the 30 units have been approved. They were approved last June by the Wildlife Board. Basically, right now, all we're doing is setting our season dates for those general season hunts. The archery seasons will be similar as they have been in the past, August 18th to September 14th, a 28-day season. No change there. The muzzleloader, similar to last year, September 26th to October 4th. And the any weapon season, again, similar to how it has been in the past, October 20th through the 28th, a 9-day season. So no changes on the season dates. Given the changes from general season hunting from regional basis to unit based. Okay, on our elk recommendations, basically fairly similar to what we've seen in the past. The spike bull hunt will start on the 18th, the same date as the archery deer does, but it does end earlier on September 7th, and this is to deal with limited entry elk hunters that draw units. As you know, limited entry folks and the spike hunters are hunting the same units. So to give the limited entry folks at least the 7 days closest to the rut without interference from spike hunters, we end the spike hunt early by 7 days. The archery any bull, which happens on totally different units, does proceed 7 days further to the 14th of September. Our any weapon elk season will be from October 6th through the 18th, similar how it has been in the past, a 13-day season. Our muzzleloader elk, again, will be similar as it has been in the past, October 31st through November 8th, a 9-day season. And our youth any bull hunt, this is for around 400 or so youth where we hold a drawing. They hunt basically on any of the any bull units. Basically during the rut, September 15th through the 23rd, and that's a 9-day unit. And then there's a special late youth any bull unit, any bull hunt in the northeastern region. This is basically a hunt that was designed to deal with some bulls that are on private land during the regular season but come off onto public land later in the year. And in the past, it's been about 15 permits, so not a lot of permits, but it gives some youth an opportunity to harvest a bull. And it also helps the region use those youth to deal with some depredation issues as well. So that's a long hunt. It's from December 1st through the 15th of January. So it gives youth a chance, if those bulls aren't available early, they can kind of move around and find those bulls. Okay, some of the recommendation changes, some of the statewide changes. We're recommending allow those youth who do draw in any one of those youth permits for the any bull units to be able to harvest an antlerless elk as well. Again, I mentioned it's about 400 youth. It wouldn't mean a whole lot as far as populations go if they do harvest cows, and it gives them an opportunity to harvest an animal on possibly their first big game hunt. We're recommending removing the split from the bull moose hunt. Currently, the way it goes is the moose hunt starts, and then there's a split where the muzzleloader deer hunt occurs, and then the hunt stops, and then the muzzleloader deer hunt proceeds, and then we start up again. With some of the new legislation out a couple of years ago allows us to actually run it right through the muzzleloader season, because once an elect-time species hunters no longer have to wear orange. So we're recommending doing that. That gives those that do draw once in a lifetime moose permit can hunt right through that season and don't have to, you know, maybe pack camp and come back and whatever. So it makes it easier for them. This will not make the muzzleloader hunters have to wear orange, because we're not making the once in a lifetime folks have to wear orange either. And there's so few of them, it's not a safety issue. We're recommending discontinuing the buck-bull combo. This is a hunt that only occurs in the northern region, and the reason for that hunt initially was to try to move some hunting pressure from the general season units that were on public land to some of these any bull units, which tend to be on private land. With going to unit by unit, this makes this very hard to administer. Not all the bull units match up perfectly with our general deer units. And also, it's no longer needed. Basically, it was done to shift people around. We can do it now with adjusting permit numbers. It's not a hunt that's needed anymore, so we're recommending discontinuing it because of our going to unit-by-unit hunting. And we're also recommending discontinuing the over-the-counter statewide youth archery deer permits. Those were initiated a couple years ago to try to give youth that do not draw a permit a chance to buy a tag over the counter and go hunting. We haven't had a lot of people take that opportunity. I think the most we've sold is about 200 statewide. And since archery will no longer be statewide, there will be even less of a draw for youth to be able to hunt those. So we're recommending discontinue it. The youth will still get quite a lot of opportunity through the regular drawing, because they do get an advantage of drawing any particular unit. So that's one where unit by unit really doesn't allow for us to continue at. Again, we're recommending discontinue it. Okay, some regional specific change recommendations. The southern region is recommending a new limited entry late weapon elk hunt on the Paunsagunt unit. They're starting to see some elk in areas where they feel a late hunt would provide some opportunity for hunters to harvest those elk. Most units in the state do have an early and late rifle hunt. The Paunsagunt is one of the few that does not, and the biologist on that unit feels that it would be a good opportunity to harvest some more bulls without detrimenting the population. The southern region is also recommending a new nanny goat hunt on the beaver unit. That unit was flown this year and, again, has quite a few goats, and they would like to lower that population, and nanny goat hunting helps us get that accomplished. Recommending clarifying the Plateau Thousand Lakes boundary, basically just to align with neighboring San Rafael and Henry Mountains unit boundaries. Once we started drawing these specific units for hunts for general season deer, we realized there were some discrepancies between one region and the next, and this is just to clarify those boundaries. Okay, the southeastern region recommended changes. They are recommending changing the Henry Mountain Bison unit boundary. Basically, this is to take advantage of an area that's currently outside the boundary where bison are going. By moving this boundary, it allows hunters to go into that area and harvest those animals that currently are being, basically, once they go outside, they're not able to harvest them. It also cleans up the boundary of the state park, I mean the national park there, it goes along that boundary. Instead, before, the boundary used to go into the park, and there's no hunting in the park. So this cleans up the boundary and makes it better for both being able to access the bison and to stay out of the park, basically. The southeastern region is also recommending changing the 9 Mile Range Creek unit to an Anti-Bull Elk unit. If any of you are aware, this unit currently on private land is Anti-Bull, but on public land is limited entry. By doing this, it simplifies the whole thing. It becomes Anti-Bull on the whole unit. Those right now, the only way we could get people to harvest on the limited entry portion is to have the hunt go really late into the season and hope those elk come off that private land. This will allow people, if they can gain access onto public, onto private land, to go ahead and hunt that private land with an Anti-Bull tag. And also, if they can find their way around and get into some of that high country, they can also harvest any bull. So it just simplifies things and makes it a lot easier. It's been a point of controversy for many years in that area, and the region's worked with the folks on those unit, and that's the consensus they came up with, is to change that to an any bull unit. Recommending changing the dates on the La Salle Dolores Triangle limited entry muzzleloader hunt. This is basically just a simple alignment to avoid some overlap with a rifle hunt. Northeastern region recommendation, some of the changes. They're recommending a new bison hunt on the Booklifts unit. Basically, this is not the entire Booklifts unit. It's just the northwestern part of the unit. Basically, this is meant to deal with some bison that are coming off the tribe. The tribe has about 600 bison. And they're basically busting at the seams, and those both cows and bulls want to come onto the public lands portion of the Booklifts. And the region feels that we can take advantage of that with hunters, harvest a few animals without being a detriment to the rest of the herd that we just transplanted there. The rest of the unit will likely open for hunting in the next year or two. We just don't have old enough bulls yet to open a hunt on the rest of it. And likely, even when we do open the rest of the unit, this will be its own little unit where we can harvest some of the bison that come off the tribe. But this is a new hunt, and basically it'll be in the once-in-a-lifetime bison, just like the Henry Mountains and then the Booklifts. It'll also give them a place to draw some nuisance permits from. Currently, they have some bison, again, from the tribe moving onto an adjacent unit that is not approved for bison. And we've been using the alternate list from the book from the Henry Mountains to go have hunters go out there and shoot those. This will give us a more local pool of hunters to draw from as well. So another recommendation is to change the Uinta Basin extended archery boundary. Basically, that boundary is fairly wide and goes up onto the foothills quite a bit. And there's been the concern that some mountain deer are being harvested during that late archery season, not dealing with the problem in town. So they have constricted that a little bit. It also will reduce some of the conflict with the Diamond Mountain deer unit. They're harvesting some of those animals that may be funneling off of that unit because the boundary is so large. And there's also a recommending a change in the youth late elk hunt boundary. This is that hunt I mentioned earlier, which in the past has had about 15 youth. It may have more now that the boundary is a little bigger, but basically they've expanded that boundary to encompass a little bit more property, and basically both to expand opportunity for youth and to help the region deal with some depredating elk late in the season. Northern region changes. They're recommending changing the Crawford Mountain portion of the cache unit to an Any Bull unit. For those of you that are not familiar with that, it's basically everything east of Bear Lake out to the Wyoming border and north to the Idaho border. This is an area that's not very good elk habitat. The elk have moved in there but are using mostly agriculture as their habitat there. So to deal with that, by opening it up as an any bull unit, hunters can go in and harvest those bulls. And a lot of the bulls are Wyoming bulls, but there are some bulls that are coming off of both the cache unit and the Morgan Southridge unit. Again, this will help deal with depredation issues and provide opportunity for, any bull hunters. Recommending a new any goat hunt on the Willard Peak unit. Basically, this is another unit where we have a thriving goat population, but they can't add more permits without having some hunter crowding issues. So they're splitting the any goat hunt into two hunts and providing more opportunity with and not having more crowding. Recommending expanding the extended archery boundary in the northern region to the shore of the Great Salt Lake. This is both the Ogden and Wasatch portion of the northern region only, so it doesn't include the central region portion. So basically what this is doing right now, the boundary is I-15, it's taking it out to the east shore of the Great Salt Lake. And basically there's a lot of little municipalities in there and some agriculture. It allows archers to be able to go out there in that extended season and harvest some animals. This will helps reduce nuisance and depredation issues in that area and also provide some archery opportunity as well. Okay, some of the key dates for the 2012 season. The big game drawing for Bucks, Bulls, Once in a Lifetime and new dedicated hunter applicants will be February 1st through March 1st. There will be an application period for preference points and application withdrawal. So if you don't want to put in for a hunt but you do want to put in for a point, you actually have until March 8th to do that. And also if you want to withdraw an application, you have until March 8th to do that. The results for the drawings will be posted May 31st. And then current dedicated hunters have a unit choice deadline, and basically that will be January 13th, 2012. The dedicated hunter coordinator will send out letters way before that deadline and then other reminders to make sure people that are current dedicated hunters are picking the units that they want to hunt in. Shed antler and shed horn season dates. Basically, if you're going to go out and shed hunt between February 1st and April 15th, you need to go online and take the online course and then have a completion certificate and have it on your person if you're out there. Any other time of the year, you do not have to have that. Dates when hunters may purchase or sell big game or its parts. Basically, if you're going to sell antlers, heads and horns of legally taken big game, you have to do it between February 15th and July 31st. Similarly, untanned hides of legally taken big game can be bought or sold August 1st through February 14th. Okay, some of the lifetime license questionnaire. So basically this is when lifetime license holders select their unit. The deadline for that will be March 1st. Those questionnaires will be sent out. Those that fail to choose a unit by the deadline, basically you will have to see what's left over and obtain a permit that way. Okay, additional key dates. These are the Disabled Hunters General Season Hunt Extensions. We have these every year. This is basically just updating the dates for the 2012 season. The Archery Deer Extension will be a preseason extension from August 13th to the 17th. The Muzzleloader Deer Extension will be also a preseason extension September 21st through the 25th. And then the Any Weapon is a preseason extension October 15th through the 19th. Archery elk will be similar to the deer, August 13th to the 17th. The muzzleloader, any bull elk, will be a postseason extension, the November 9th through the 14th. And then the any weapon, any bull season, will be a preseason extension, September 15th through the 23rd. And they can also hunt during that late youth hunt up in the northeastern region, just in that area as well. The muzzleloader spike elk hunt, there'll be a postseason extension November 12th through the 16th. And then the any weapon spike elk will be a postseason extension. It'll be October 9th through the 23rd. These are extensions we give to disabled hunters. Basically what a disabled hunter has to do is go into our office, fill out an application, get a doctor's note that they are truly disabled, and then basically fill out the paperwork, and then they could get these extensions. It's not a lot of people. It's usually around, I want to say, about 150 people statewide that take advantage of that are truly disabled, so it's not a large pool of people. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thanks, Anise. Questions from the rack on the presentation? Sure, Dale.
On the beaver 90 goat hunt, you've got on the Willard Peak, you got a any goat hunt. Why the difference in those? Why can't we just have an any goat on the beaver unit?
We do. We currently have two any goat hunts on the beaver units, and in addition, we'll have an any goat hunt.
Okay. I thought on the goat hunts there, you had to stick with strictly a billy on the beaver.
Right now you do, but we're adding a nanny goat hunt to actually reduce the population. So there are already two any goat hunts that will remain there, and then we'll add a nanny goat hunt on top of that. So okay. There'll actually be three goat hunts on the beaver unit.
All right.
Other questions? Go ahead, Brian.
I just have a question on the goat hunt as well. Looking at the Willard Peak, I noticed mm-hmm. those dates are quite a bit shorter than the beaver, and mm-hmm. the objective's the same.
Right.
I spoke to the biologist up there, and he said that he doesn't see a reason why they couldn't just run the same as the beaver. Do you see a biological reason if we're trying to reduce those tags that it couldn't just kind of mirror the beaver unit?
Yeah, he did say that. He does have a concern about a Saturday opener on that unit for the first hunt. And he said he wouldn't have a problem with a longer hunt except he does worry about a Saturday opener. That's an area of high recreational use other than hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels that a midweek opener would be better, like a Monday opener. I think that's what the last two racks have passed. And what
it is like a Monday opener.
Yeah.
And okay.
Right.
So just extending the opportunity.
Yeah,
kind of
I think
alleviating
it ends up
the
being
perceived,
14 days or something like that.
The alleviated perceived
right.
notion of the, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, there's no biological reason it couldn't be longer.
Sam.
And you saw on this late youth hunt that we're having on the Ponchagon, is there any limit to the number of tags that on any of this youth hunting?
Yeah, it's spelled out in a statewide plan. Of course, we're not setting permits now.
Right.
So, but the number of permits are set to basically bring the buck to doe ratio down below 50. So
yeah,
as long as we're above 50 bucks per 100 does, we would issue enough permits on that youth hunt to bring the buck to doe ratio below 50.
Okay, bulls and calves, right?
What's that?
Bulls and calves. I'm talking about the elk hunt.
Oh, the elk hunt.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said the management.
No, okay. This recommendation for the late weapon hunt,
okay.
Is there any limit on the number of tags?
There is. In the statewide plan, it does say what percentage can go into the late hunt versus the early hunt. I don't know the percentages right off the bat, but again, we're not setting permits right now.
But there is
a formula to how to set early versus late permits.
Okay, and another thing we talked about in our Ponchagon Elk strategy meeting that we had here a while back was during the archery spike hunt, you'd be able to take a cow elk if you wanted to instead of a mm-hmm. spike. I didn't see that in this. Is that
yeah, that again won't
venue,
be.
Or?
Yeah, it'll be in the May meeting.
Okay.
So what we do is we'll look at all the units statewide, and those are there below 75% of objective. We will not allow our troops. Yeah, and that's how it'll go.
Okay.
And then likely the Ponchagon will drop out of that.
Thank you.
Other questions from the rack? I've got one more, Anise. I got several emails, maybe some other folks did. One resonated with me about the youth any bull hunt and bonus points. And I guess the reason it resonated is I've run two kids all the way through and never drawn a tag.
Yeah.
Have you heard, has this come up in any of their racks?
No, it hasn't.
Is it?
You know, it's something that really hasn't been on my radar either, to be honest. As far as preference points for that specific
bonus point, preference points, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, I can run that by our folks in licensing and see how we should have some kind of.
I'm not sure even what the odds are, you know,
yeah.
whether there'd be any gain.
Yeah,
for
we'll
kids
have to
they
look
get
at
put
that.
In for. What about 4 years?
Yeah, I'll certainly check into that. Yeah, it's something that really hasn't hit the radar screen yet.
Comment on that too.
Sure, Rusty.
Could it be a once in a lifetime also for the youth? Once they draw it, they're not allowed to put in again?
I don't know. I don't see why you would limit youth opportunity that
well,
way.
Just so other people would draw. Yeah. Once they draw it, or at least a way.
Well, if you put a point system in, then those that have been drawing will draw more likely than those that have just drawn. So.
And there's a real competitive advantage for non-residents, I know, to draw those permits.
Yeah.
But
yeah, we'll certainly look at that.
Any other questions from the RAC? Questions from the public? For those of you that came in late, this is a question period. We want to hear from you. We're glad you came. This is a comment card. We'll take comments after questions. Does anybody have a question for Anise about the presentation? Give us your name and step to the mic.
Lee Tracy from Enoch. I have three questions. Because the extension on the archery extended area goes clear to the lake now, and the reason for it is for nuisance animals and stuff, are there going to be provisions to hunt does on the Ogden unit? Right now it's just bucks only.
Yeah, that has not been discussed yet, and it's something that will be set in the May meeting, but it is something I'll bring up with the region to see. They do have it on the Wasatch part of it, but not the Ogden. But, yeah, it's a good point, and I'll certainly bring it up when we write the rule in May. So the boundary will still be the same, but it'll change the way the rule is written to allow for doe hunts. But that's not something that we'll discuss that in the May meeting.
All right, question number two. Are there plans to move the buck-bull and once-in-a-lifetime applications and draws closer to the antlerless draws and after the classifications so that we know how many tags we're competing for?
Yeah, there are no plans currently, and so it's basically... Right now, no. There are no plans to change it.
You said that we would lose the buck-bull combo. How many permits are we talking about?
Okay, so basically, we won't lose any permits on that. There were 2,000 permits that were taken from the Northern Region deer permits and put into that. So they would go back into that and then apportioned to the different units. So there won't be any permits lost.
Any other questions from the audience? I see your hand up earlier, Paul. All right. No other questions. We'll move to comments. Craig Christiansen. Followed by Lee Tracy.
So I'm Craig Christiansen from Cedar City, here representing UBA, or Utah Bowman's Association. I've got two recommendations from UBA, Mule Deer Foundation and United Wildlife Cooperative, Bowhunters of Utah and Utah Bowman's Association, jointly proposed that the RACs and Wildlife Board reconsider the decision to make archery deer hunters pick a unit in 2012. And instead allow archery deer hunters to continue to hunt statewide. And the reasons for this proposal are as follows. As stated by the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources biologists several times over the past several years, there's no biological reason to restrict the area that archery deer hunters are allowed to hunt in general season hunting units. The number of hunters that harvest deer with archery tackle are not statistically impacting the buck to doe ratios. Number two, as determined by the Statewide Archery Committee in 2009, statewide archery hunting is what the majority of archery deer hunters want, despite the outcry of overcrowding issues by a small minority. And three, statewide archery may encourage an increased number of hunters to start to choose archery. Moving hunters to archery could allow for less impact to sportsmen rather than just continuing to cut permit numbers. And then number four, having more hunters choose a less successful hunt strategy will increase buck-to-doe ratios without loss of opportunity. Number five, despite the decision to start hunting smaller units with firearms, the majority of the racks and the majority of the public were in favor of leaving archery deer statewide hunting opportunity intact. And number six, it would allow the youth statewide archery opportunity to continue. And then the second recommendation is to provide for a longer season length on a once-in-a-lifetime hunt. The Utah Bowman Association recommends the following season dates on the Ogden, Willard Peak, Rocky Mountain goat hunts. Early is September 10th through the 23rd. Late September 24th through October 14th. And then the nanny goat is October 1st through the 14th. And the biologist for this unit has no objections to these dates, and these dates provide for a Monday opener, which satisfies the law enforcement's concerns for the unit. These dates have been proposed at the Northern and Central racks, and both racks approved these dates. That's all I've got.
Thanks, Craig. Lee Tracy, followed by Steve Thompson.
Lee Tracy, United Wildlife Cooperative. The United Wildlife Cooperative supports the joint proposal just presented by the Mule Deer Foundation, the United Bowman's Association, and the Bow Hunters of Utah in regards to statewide archery. In the coming months, we would also like the RAC and Division to consider ways to implement comprehensive hunter management in the newly created Mule Deer subunits. Creating these subunits allows us to manage hunters and deer on a unit basis, yet we have chosen to manage every general season unit from 18 to 25 bucks per 100 does. Between this year and next, we will have removed 13,000 hunters as well as the associated revenue. As you know, these cuts do not address our deer, rather than the social aspect of deer hunting. Past division surveys have always shown that the most important thing to the majority of hunters is always having the opportunity to be in the field with the tag. We also acknowledge there is a segment of the population that desires bigger antlered deer at a cost of hunting less frequently, and we respect that. The United Wildlife Cooperative urges the division to come up with a comprehensive plan in the coming months to manage our general season unit to reflect these statistics in the 2012 management plan. Thank you.
Thanks, Lee. Lee, we got a question for you, Sam.
Yeah, this, you say you represent the Utah Wildlife Cooperative?
United Wildlife Cooperative.
Oh, this is Utah on here. Okay, and where are you out of?
The unit was formed in Salt Lake City.
So this is...
Where do you live?
We have not quite 1,000 members.
Okay.
And we're working on it.
You're out of the northern end of the state. Yeah.
Well, I'm from Eni, but I'm the southern end.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Sam. And Lee, Steve Thompson.
I'm Steve Thompson from Glenwood, southern region. My objective... My concern is the objective for the 28-day archery hunt. It's three times longer than any other season you're given any other sportsman. Fairness, I don't understand with the technology the bow hunters have. I don't understand why they're getting three times longer to hunt their big game, whatever. Also, they're the first ones out for the season. That's a little advantage for the muzzleloader, such as myself, and I still think that they need to pick their unit, hunt their unit for their 9 days, just like the archery, or just like the muzzleloader, just like the rifle. So that's what I feel.
Thanks, Steve. Got a couple of their comments or cards here that don't fit quite as well in this category. It looks like there's others coming up. Gary Allen and Stanton Cleve. It looks like your comments relate more to our spring meeting, but you're here and we'd like to hear from you. So if you want to come forward and give us your comments, we'll ask the division to make note of these for the analyst meeting that's coming up this spring. It may relate more to, since we're not talking numbers tonight, but please come up and tell us what's on your mind. You have 3 minutes each.
All right. Well, that's, we didn't know for sure what meeting we're supposed to be to, but anyway, what I'm representing is the Monroe Mountain Grazing Association. We formed a grazing association to deal with this number of elk that's on the Monroe Mountain. And I guess where we're coming from, in 1970, there was no elk on the Monroe Mountain. And today, there's, I don't know, by your counts, I think somewhere 1,200 or 1,300, and you're wanting to increase it to by 600 more. And the ranchers, we had a meeting, and we're all opposed to that. Before you increase that elk herd at all, you need to make some kind of compensation to the ranchers on the damage they're doing today. And that was our main comment. And I don't know what meeting that takes place out of when, or if that's still on the agenda for to increase that elk herd, but we're definitely opposed to it. And that's representing all the grazing, everybody that grazes cattle and sheep on the Monroe Mountain. And we wanted to mention one other thing. That grass on that mountain, on any of these mountains, has been allotted to ranchers ever since before this was even the United States. You know, our families have been here. We've been making a living ranching that. And this herd of elk has got to be, it has to be controlled someplace. There's room for a herd of deer back on the mountain, and we all know that deer have been ate by predators. You need to do something with the predators, and you can have all the deer, a big herd of deer back there, but this herd of elk needs to be controlled. That's my comment, I guess. And by the way, what meeting do you say we need to be to?
There'll be a spring meeting on antlerless permit recommendations. Let's see if we can look that up. We'll get that for you before. We'll look that up so you know for certain. And also, I've got maybe a follow-up question for Anise or Teresa about elk management plan revisions, when those may come back to the rack. Elk management plan revisions, when do you anticipate those coming back?
Yeah, those should be coming through the rack in the June rack meeting.
After the antlerless or before?
Yeah, after the antlerless.
It's June rack meeting.
Right.
Do you know the date on that one, Stephanie?
I printed it out and left it on the printer, the new schedule. We'll see that we get that to you, fellows. Come on up.
I just got the same comments that Stanton had. He's pretty well exactly, except for I want to know how you guys figure you can run 1,300 head by your counts on the Monroe Mountain, on the Fish Lake National Forest. This is the whole Fish Lake. The forest plan calls for 2,400 head. And is there any way you can give me an answer on that? And how? One other thing is I want to know how you can run on private land without, I mean, just how you can do it to start with. You guys all know that I feed your elk all winter, and I want you to, I don't want the elk on there. They're just, there's no, you guys ain't taking care of your elk at all. You gotta cut the numbers way down, way down. They destroy my fences and my irrigation equipment until it makes a pretty rough try and farm around there.
Can we get your name for the record?
Gary Allen.
Thanks, Gary. Is that a question for, you want to respond to that?
Gary, as we've discussed many times, the elk are managed according to a statewide plan.
is put in place and by these unit management plans that we're in the process of revising right now. You attended the meeting, as I understand it, for the Monroe unit, so you're familiar with that process. The Forest Service was there at that meeting and their members of this committee to represent the interests of their management plans as well, and I presume that they have put forth whatever influence they need to meet the objectives of their management plan. If they have not, you need to bring that to the Forest Service attention and have them push that point with regard to the management plan on those specific units where that's affected. With regard to wildlife on private lands, it's a simple fact that big game animals and actually small game animals and upland game animals use private land. And it's also a plain fact that if they were not able to do that, that we'd have less wildlife in this state. So sportsmen need to be grateful to private landowners for their tolerance of wildlife on their private properties. And oftentimes, wildlife does damage that property. We have a set of programs in place to compensate landowners for damages done specifically by big game. And Gary, you're familiar with that program. And we've tried to employ that as best we can. And in the past year, the way that system works is a certain amount of money is allocated statewide to pay for compensation for big game damage to private lands. And last year, the claims that were filed outstripped our ability to pay that, so those payments were prorated to the tune of 81% of what the claims were. We've got a building block proposed to be introduced into this legislature this year in order to increase the amount of money that we're allowed to spend to compensate landowners for big game damage. That hopefully will answer your question about, you know, what we intend to do or what we can do. The truth is, we don't control where wildlife goes. That's part of the definition of what they are. They go where they want to go because they're wildlife. We're charged with compensating for that, and we do the best we can with the resources that we have.
Thanks, Doug. We're on a bit of a tangent, but yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at it right here too. I was going to say it's the April 10th meeting, isn't it?
April 10th is numbers.
April 10th is numbers and also analyst recommendations and guidebook. The board meeting is May 2nd, 3rd.
Okay, but I think Denise just told you that unit plans are in June.
Yeah, the unit plans will be in June. It's not on the new agenda she sent out.
Typically they're done before the analyst recommendation in case you have to make reductions.
Right, but this year we did not do it that way for the fact that we're putting both analysts and Bucks and Bulls together. It would make for a very lengthy meeting, so we pushed it ahead.
What's the June date?
Well, there are no meetings in June.
It's the July one.
It's July 31st for management plans.
Right.
And not to belabor this tangent, but the forest plan was mentioned. Real briefly, the Fish Lake National Forest Land and Resource Management Plan is dated 1986 and has been amended several times. It relates to elk and livestock grazing. Utilization standards were adopted in the year 2000, and I'd have to look specifically at the allotments in question, but typically it boils down to doesn't matter what eats it. When it reaches 40% utilization, animals need to be moved. So the numbers that were in the 1986 plan relating to elk, the Fish and Wildlife, what I'm trying to say is the Fish Lake National Forest is on board with the new process the Division of Wildlife has. That's why you see me here tonight, and that's why we're involved in those work plan meetings and participate and, defer to the Wildlife Board for setting elk population levels. Getting back to the agenda item at hand, I got some additional comment cards. Greg McGregor, followed by DeLoss Christensen.
Good evening. Greg McGregor, St. George, Utah. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Messerly, members of the RAC, appreciate your time and the opportunity to stand before you. I am acting as voice this evening for a newly formed sportsman's group out of St. George in southern Utah, acting voice tonight for the southern chapter of the Safari Club International. Okay, we hope to make ourselves known throughout the wildlife community and the conservation community in providing a lot for conservation. One issue that we would like to address, and I know this is kind of a tweener here between the numbers and hunt dates as proposed by the division. One of the things that we've always been concerned about in southern Utah is the spirit of the law versus the letter of the law, in the fact that, and I'm sure the numbers, in fact, Mr. Messerly talked about the wildlife biologists are actually out doing their counts now. And we know that one of the advantages to having the subunits is to take into account how many hunters or how many animals can be taken into each one of those units. And we just hope that we'd like to go on record as saying that we hope the numbers, the counts, are accurate enough to sustain the number of hunters in each one of those units. Many of you know that through the years, the sportsmen in southern Utah, particularly St. George, have been concerned about the 9-day hunt on the Pine Valley unit and all that out there. I know that this last year we've paid attention to the number of deer that were killed out there on the second half of the hunt, and it was markedly a lot more than on the first weekend of the hunt. Okay? And I would just hope and admonish and make a recommendation that those numbers be taken into account when the counts are done and when the numbers of the permits are given out to each one of those regions. Any questions? Thanks for your time.
Sorry, DeLaw is followed by Gene Boardman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is DeLoss Christensen from Glenwood, Utah. I want to thank this RAC in particular for your support last year in the effort that has been made with the support of the Wildlife Board for doing the unit management plan. I think this board needs to be commended because I think you led in that position. And without your support, I don't believe it would have happened. Last year, as you recall, you voted to ask the archers to hunt on individual units rather than statewide, along with the other hunters in the state. I'd like to ask you to support that again this year, if you would. As you know, as just been mentioned by our friends that own private property, our deer are really in trouble. And that's no secret to anyone here. They need all the help they can get. And pressure impacts deer. They're a sensitive species, relatively speaking. I had the opportunity to attend a meeting about a month ago where a representative from the archers organizations in the state were there asking what you heard this evening, the mask. I asked that gentleman that evening. He had also made the presentation in a very aggressive and hostile environment in at the RAC in Green River last year. He became very assertive when the RAC chairman there asked them if they didn't want to participate by restricting their pressure on deer along with other sportsmen. And his answer was, not one day, not one minute, not one acre. And I asked him if he had changed his feeling about that since that meeting last year, last month. And he wasn't angry anymore, but he said no, that they didn't. They felt that there was no impact on the deer from archery hunting. And, of course, there is. They harvest deer, maybe not as many. They're out there in the field impacting these animals. And I'm an archer. I've hunted with a bow. My children have hunted with a bow. I have no feelings against the weapon, but I think we all need to participate in the effort that needs to be made to turn this deer herd around the state. And I hope we can have your support again this year. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Gene Boardman. A couple of questions from Chris Compton and Anthony Phelps. Do you want me to read these questions? You guys want to come forward? All right, Anthony. Chris, you want to go after Gene?
Sure. Gene Boardman, Hinckley, Utah. The reason I came to this rack tonight was because I figured somebody was going to want a little better deal on this thing, and the boat hunters showed up wanting a little better deal. I'm more concerned about that somewhere in the state, somehow, the dedicated hunters are going to throw one in that they want. And I'm really concerned about that. In fact, with the bow hunting thing, it does go to dedicated hunters because they hunt all three seasons. We don't. I want to tell you all here, I've never killed a deer that was there because of the dedicated hunter program. I don't think I've ever seen a deer that was there because of the dedicated hunter program. But I've sure lost a lot of tags, and my family's lost a lot of tags because of the dedicated hunter program. Especially it happens in the southern unit. I'd just like to see it go away. But I ask you, if that comes up anywhere in the state, let's everybody put in a little flesh on this thing. Not that one group or another gets a special override on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris Compton.
My name's Chris. I guess the question that I've always had, and I've never got an answer on it, is relating to permit numbers and the issuance of them compared to application periods. My question is they do the counts, and it says that if a buck to doe ratio doesn't meet the doe ratio for a certain unit, it should be closed. Is that correct?
Anish, you may want to come up. There's a long history with this, and it relates as much to once-in-a-lifetime species and survey timing, but go ahead, Anise.
Yeah, we do manage on buck-to-doe ratios on general season and limited entry units, and no, we do not close units that are below buck-to-doe ratio. We reduce the number of permits on those units to bring the ratios back up.
Okay, so that answers they never get closed. My question was, is if there were a unit that has to be reduced in permits, if you have the hunters that put in for it wanting to put in for a specific unit, if they put in for it and then they end up losing their permits, why couldn't they reverse it to where you know permit numbers before the application period, then if there's so many tags on a unit, the hunters may or may not put in for that unit?
I can take a stab at that one. Ten years ago, you permit numbers were shown in the proclamation with the hunts in January. Most of the, or a lot of the surveys and all the harvest data typically comes in later than that. So biologists are forced to be, and the division was forced to be conservative in permit numbers. Does that make sense? So you get to see the permit numbers, but all of a sudden the spring rolls around, and gosh, we could have issued far more permits because now we have this these new data. herds and most populations are on the way up, and most of the time we're incrementally increasing permit numbers. Is that right, Anise? It's only been the last couple of years that you've seen some reductions. So when you look in the odds book, they issued 100 tags last year. One of the reductions was on the Parker this year, and a lot of guys were shocked and would have put in somewhere else. I guess that happens, but other states actually started this, and Utah adopted it, and that's kind of where we're at. Anything you want to add to that, Anise? Is that accurate?
Yeah, sure. I can address it a little bit further. Not only because population could increase, inversely, populations could be decreasing, and we may have issued too many permits. So it's best to make recommendations for the following year on the best available data, the most current data, which we don't get until mid-February. So once we have that data, we set permits. The reason the drawing is so much earlier is people like an earlier drawing because they want to reserve whatever, you know, dates they want off or whatever. So that's the reason we have an early drawing. The other reason we have an early drawing is to actually beat some of the other states to the drawing, because there's a, you know, both resident and non-residents that put in the state. If you're, you know, last, you may end up having a lot fewer applicants in your state than other states. So there's a lot of things in play here. So we're trying to set permits on the best data available, which doesn't come in until mid-February. So we could have the drawing later, but then people only have a month or two to plan a hunt that may be a once-in-a-lifetime hunt, and so on and so forth. That's the rationale for setting the permits so late and having the drawing so early.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Chris. While you're up there, Anise, Anthony Phelps' question is, why not do a three-point or bigger hunt on the deer hunts? Your favorite.
Yeah. Let me count the ways. I've probably addressed this, you know, this question to hunters online and by phone on a weekly basis. And I would love to send you the research Utah did when we did have three-point or better in the 80s on 10 or more units. When you think about it, you think it would work, but when you put it down on paper, it does not. And I'll give you just the main reasons why that is. If you don't reduce hunter numbers, so you make it three-point or better and still have the same number of hunters, you're putting all that hunter pressure on the older age class of bucks. So what we end up doing is saving the yearlings and then killing all the older age class. Hunter success will reduce a little bit, but you will kill more older bucks because you have lots of hunters out there and they want to kill something. So you save the yearlings only to be killed as a two-year-old. So all you're doing is delaying the inevitable 1 year by doing three-point or better, and you're putting more hunting pressure on the older age class that you want breeding most years. So it actually works against you on a population level effect. So you end up having fewer older bucks in the population, more younger bucks, which are usually the most numerous in the population, and you want hunters to take some younger bucks out of there, because if you have a lot of hunters out there, and there's more young bucks than old bucks, obviously they're going to take more young bucks. It's just the way it works out. So biologically, it just does not make sense. It makes sense to the average hunter that if you save them as a yearling, they'll be a three-point or better the following year. But it's usually you're only delaying it by 1 year. They're a three-point the second year. Most bucks are a three-point the second year of their life. So all you're doing is delaying the inevitable 1 year, and you're not gaining any more bucks to does if you don't limit the number of hunters. The best way to grow big bucks is to limit the number of permits out there. It's been proven again and again, not only in Utah, but multiple Western states have tried this and have gone away from it similarly. In about the same period, around the 80s, early 90s, a lot of Western states tried it, and they've all gone away from it. A few of them do still do it, and that's more because of public pressure than anything else. They still agree that biologically it's an unsound. And the states that do still do it have very light hunting pressure, Wyoming. For example, they can do it, but they don't have the hunting pressure we do in Utah, and they don't issue the number of permits we do here.
Thanks. Another confounding thing are the giant 4-year-old 2-points that you see selected for. That's all I've got for comment cards. Did we miss anybody for this agenda item? All right. Turn it over to discussion by the rack. Let the record show Mike Worthen's joined us. We heard about lots of things here tonight. Max here too. Welcome. Lane.
I really appreciate the public being here tonight and sharing their comments with us. First, to address the statewide archery issue that's been brought up tonight. When this RAC and the Wildlife Board 1 year ago voted to go to unit by unit management, it was my feeling at that time and several of my constituents here on the board that what we're trying to do for deer isn't for us sitting here in this room. And I feel very strongly about this. What we're trying to do for deer is for my grandson, Cordell's grandson, you know, all of you, it's for our future. We can't fix this deer problem in 1 year or 2 years or 5 years. It's been going on for 30 or 40 years. I mean, it's just been a problem. The sportsmen that I've talked to for the last 2 years, and I am a sportsman's representative, and I talk to a lot of them, all feel like, and they've all give me the same feeling, we got to do whatever we got to do to help bring our deer herd back. If that's put bigger bounties on the coyotes, you know, kill more lions, go to the legislature, write your legislators to get more money for highway crossings. I'm in the construction business. We just did a wildlife crossing up here on I-70 this last year to the tune of, you know, millions of dollars. Those are the kinds of things that we're going to need to do going forward in order to increase our deer herd, is to reduce highway mortality, help with the predation, and also, as hunters, we've all got to sacrifice something. And I'm willing to sacrifice as a rifle hunter. I've sacrificed, you know, I can't hunt the whole southern region. I've got to put in for a draw. I'm going to put in for the Boulder Mountain unit because I got a ranch over there that I go hunt on every year. This year, my hunt got cut to 5 days. Well, that's not a big deal. I still went over there, had a good time with my family. But my feeling is, I feel very strongly about this, if the rifle hunters and the muzzleloader hunters are going to sacrifice and go to unit by unit management, I feel like the archery hunters should make some kind of sacrifice too. And if that means you have to choose a unit, you're already getting to hunt 28 days on the first hunt plus the extended archery on the Wasatch Front. I don't feel like that's asking too much for you guys to help, to step in and help with the rest of us to bring the steer herd back. And I know that that's the feeling of a lot of sportsmen, especially here in southern Utah. That's all I've got. Thanks.
Thank you, Brian.
I've got a comment. Those are some great points. As we sit up here, I think we've been charged to make decisions based on biology. And as we look at this, I've done a lot of thinking about this. And you just mentioned the extended archery hunt up in Salt Lake. And that hunt goes from, the third week of August to the last day of November on bucks. There's no rifle hunting. There's no muzzleloader hunting. And that unit right there has 35 bucks per 100 does. And everybody in this room wants to see more bucks per does, you know, more buck to doe ratio and more deer. And that unit up there, that little subunit, probably has more hunting pressure than any other unit in the state, and it has the most deer on it in any other unit in the state. Buck to doe ratio. That's general season. I talked to the biologist just yesterday, and he said that all bow hunters effectively do on that unit is just herd deer and keep them out of town. And that's why they instigated it. It's been 15 years. And so as we make these decisions, I understand that it's a social issue, and the perception is that bow hunters get 28 days, but they also can't kill a deer at 500 yards. And so I'm just throwing this out there. I just think that it's worthy of discussion is all that I'm saying. Is you've got a unit like that up there that has a lot of bucks per dose. So I just, a lot of big ones, yes. And it's a great opportunity. I'm just saying, I just, that right there is a pretty good model of what a lot of states have gone to everywhere else just because of, you know, either public pressure or to increase opportunity and have less impact on the herd. Archery hunters take around 16 to 18%. Muzzleloader hunters take around 45%, and rifle deer hunters take anywhere from 35 to 45%, depending on the year and the weather conditions. And so those are just a lot of things to think about. I'm just throwing that out there for discussion points.
Thanks. Anybody else? Sam.
Thank you. I'll tell you, you know, I've been a bow hunter back when we used longbows. You know, I've done this forever. You probably can tell by the gray in my beard. But one of the things that, and I agree with Lane on this, you know, we have gone for many years trying to get where we could get down and start managing these units, controlling the number of hunters in the units. We've made sacrifices just throughout, all the way. We've really tried to do things, and after the meeting last year, to anything we can to try to help the deer herd, to do something to let this deer herd come back. And the point that Brian just made, well, there you go. There, I mean, we pamper bow hunters to the, I mean, there's just no limit. The long seasons, you get an extended hunt. Nobody's even mentioned elk, but we have all kinds of hunting. I think with, even on the spike archery, I think it's unlimited for youth. I think, you know, that they can get all the tags they want to hunt. So I think we provide an awful lot of opportunity for archers. And it just upsets me that we're just finally getting this going and the first boot hasn't hit the ground and we're wanting to change it. You know, we've just put too much effort into this. There's been too much sacrifice. And I feel strongly that we need to go with this plan, like Lane was saying, for 5 or so years and get this controlled. It's all speculation on how it's going to turn out and what's going to happen. But I totally agree with what DeLaus has said here, and I feel strongly that we need to support the recommendations that the board and the RACs put out last year and make the archers toe the line just like the rest of us have.
Cordell.
Yeah, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but we go through this every time, and it just seems like there's no end to what archers want. I mean, I know that there was a presentation given in St. George, and the question was asked, well, why do you keep wanting that? And the answer from the archer was, because we deserve it. Now, why are you archers any better than the muzzleloader hunter or the rifle hunter? Now, trust me, I used to archery hunt. I don't anymore. I have not one thing against archers, but somewhere we've got to draw the line. I mean, we can't just keep giving, and you guys need to take a stand and maybe support the deer herd, not your own personal interests. And like I said, I agree with everything Lane and Sam said. I think it's time that we just say, okay, if it was up to me, I would say that the archery hunt should be 2 weeks. You draw your unit.
Other comments? Claire.
Yeah. I'd like to echo my sentiments with Brian, with all due respect to my other good friends here on this board. Archers aren't hurting our deer herd, period. That's biological fact. Why we're beating up on them, I have no idea. The whole essence of hunting archery is the solo experience out in the mountain. If we condense it to 14 days, we blow that. I think wasn't it last year, they had an average of 9 or 11 days on an archer, something like that.
Yeah, depending on whether it's a deer or elk archer, they hunt roughly around 11 days.
Okay. We condense this to 14 days. Every archer in the state almost is out there for the hunt, bumping into each other, creating a bad situation. take less than 10% success on the tags, there's no reason for us to beat up on the archers. A couple other things. I know Gary Allen mentioned the tags on the fish lake for the elk the elk herd numbers at 2,400. I think it's actually 4,800 in comparing that to the Monroe. Also, the nine-day rifle hunt was a wonderful experience this year again. Middle of the week, opened back up to light hunting pressure, able to go out with my boys and have a good hunt again, rather than a five-day condensed hunt with most people out there. Thank you.
Thanks, Claire. Other comments? Sure, Mike.
Thank you. I kind of agree with my colleagues in here that this new system that we're going into, let's give it a try, because I've been in a lot of other states hunting. I've lived in other states, raised here in Utah, but the deer problem isn't endemic to Utah. It's west-wide. It's a real problem, and I've scratched my head wondering what in the heck was it. We blame predators, but predators is a problem when the deer herds can't sustain the predation. So some things happened before the predators became a problem that allowed it to get down in. And I've worked with the livestock industry for years, and I'm sure there's a few in the room that can remember driving from Cedar City to Fillmore and seeing thousands of deer in the 50s and 60s. And then about 70, we started to see that gradual decline. And if you look at the livestock industry, it was about the same time that they saw that gradual decline in AUMs. The habitat started to grow to where the deer couldn't get to it. And maybe there's a correlation there. The non-use of the federal lands or the public lands is a problem with the deer herd. Not so much the others. The others is a symptom of the deer herds. The predation is a problem when the deer can't take the predation. The population can't sustain it. So maybe there's something in there that mismanagement of our federal lands is a huge problem that nobody's really looked at to see what relationship livestock grazing has had on that, because back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s was probably the highest grazing this country has ever seen, where we had millions of sheep out on the range that was grazing that browse down to where new shoots had come out, and the deer would survive on those, where we were knocking the brush down where they could get to good feed. And now we don't have that. We see sterile environments to where the elk do all right, but the deer just take it in the shorts every year, and maybe we need to look at other areas. But this 29-unit system that we've got, I really think it gives the deer a chance. We've got hunters that follow the deer on top of the mountain, clear down into the winter range or the breeding ranges, and really cause havoc on those last 2 days of the hunt. And for the life of me, and we can, with the old system, we could follow them deer around just about wherever we wanted to go. Now I think it's going to be a little more better, and I think we owe the deer a chance to see if this system is going to work and maybe work on some other areas, such as limited hunts in some areas that we don't see them objectives, instead of continue to push nine-day hunts or continue to push them deer to their limit, and that's about all I've got.
Thanks. Anybody else?
Mac.
This last month, we've attended the elk management plan in different units, and I've been a party to two of those, and my personal feeling is, yes, we need to do something with the deer, but in this smaller units will help, but the increase in the elk herd, I think, is very damaging to the deer herd. They move the deer out. They're moving them in town because deer are very fragile. They don't survive with pressure from the elk. The elk can, it's easy to control elk. All you gotta do is just kill them. Deer die, you know. And I think that looking at the elk management plan, I think that the numbers of the elk should be reduced, that along with the smaller units, to see what it would do to the deer population. I mean, we're just talking to the smaller units now, but I think the big problem is in the wintertime, elk very directly compete with deer on the winter range. And deer can't stand that pressure and they move. It's also a social thing with deer and elk. You don't see deer where elk is at. That's all I'm going to say.
Claire.
One more thing. I forgot the most important thing, Steve. Besides, I think Mike's got a great point. We need to get more millions of sheep out there. Back in those days, the coyotes took the sheep first, left the deer. I remember those days.
Wow.
Now, just a light moment here, Brian.
Coyotes are hungry for them sheep.
They're just easier to catch. But on this smaller deer unit management, let's not anybody suppose that all of us are in favor of it. I opposed it last year after a lot of thought. I've heard unlimited references to the smaller units in Nevada, how they do it. Nevada's been unit by unit for many decades. If you've read the Nevada deer studies, they're an all-time low, right at 100,000. We're following their plan almost verbatim. Just a thought.
Let's stay on point now. More comments? We're moving. Are we inching towards motions? We're talking about season dates on 30 units.
Okay. I still want to make a comment.
Sure, Sam.
And while we've got all these bow hunting people here and these organizations, it bewilders me why you guys are not trying to do something with the elk hunt and getting your archery hunts during the rut, the rifle out, and hunting with primitive weapons. I mean, now there is a good goal for you guys to get squared away. This is the only state in the West, I think, where we rifle hunt during the rut and bow hunt and muzzle loading the fringes. I just think that would be great. And one other comment is I totally disagree that these deer can be run from one end of the state to the other by archers and not have some stress and casualties that go along with that. So I just don't get it when they say they don't have any impact on buck-to-doe ratios. Well, I think if you kill a buck, you have impact. It may be a decimal point in that ratio, but it does affect it. And on that, unless there's any further comments, I'd like to make a recommendation.
Go ahead.
I'd like to recommend we accept the proposal as presented.
Second. I'd like to amend that.
A motion on the table, seconded by Mike Worthing.
Can I amend it?
Go ahead.
I'm a little bit rusty on my Roberts rules here. I would like to first amend that motion with changing the Willard Peak. Change the Willard Peak hunt dates to
those that were written into the record by Yuba?
Yes. The September 10th to the 23rd, the late hunt being September 24th to this October 14th, and the nanny from October 1st to October 14th.
Two ways we can deal with it. Sam, do you want to make that part of your motion?
Was this recommendation made at the other RAC meetings that they're doing right here?
Yeah, it was, and it was voted on and accepted by both.
Okay, yeah, I'll I'll second what he just said.
So we have an amended motion. Is it, Mike, you still second that?
Yes.
I waited a long time to get up here, guys.
All right, let's hear it.
I'd like to amend it to go back to statewide archery.
So I'm guessing, Sam, you're not going to accept that and
absolutely not
amended to your motion. So we're going to vote on these. We're going to vote on these motions separately. Let's vote on the modified original motion. You better read that back to us.
Statewide first.
Yeah, we're going to vote on the statewide amendment as it was amended, which is as recommended with those Willard Peak modified dates.
You vote on the latest amendment first.
You want to
make it statewide archery first. You deal with that first. Then you work.
All right, we can. We'll go backwards. So we'll work on the amended motion all by itself. Statewide archery by Brian Johnson, seconded by Claire Woodbury. Any discussion on the end? Speaking of Rusty, let's vote on it. Those in favor? Those against? Did you get that vote? Motion fails. Back to the original amended motion.
We need an any separate or just all? Oh, it's accepted.
It's all the same now because it's accepted. It's just one.
Yeah. Do we need to restate it? Yeah, they've been read in twice, I think. Any questions on that motion? It was as presented with the Willard Peak modified date. Those in favor? Those against? Motion passes. You get that vote? Claire and Brian against? All right, moving on to the next action item on the agenda, CWMU Management Plans and Permit Numbers. Boyd.
All right, I'm here tonight to present to you a summary of the CWMU management plans and applications, and then also address the landowner associations. That works a lot better. Okay. First of all, there were 87 CWMUs that required renewal for the 2012 hunting season. 83 actually submitted their applications. Four CWMUs have dropped out. We have only one CWMU that is recommending, that the division is recommending denial. I'll go over this one. And also only one split recommendation out of all of the CWMUs this year. And I will go over those as when I do the region by region recommendations. There are 10 CWMUs that will be required for renewal in 2013, 15, and 14. There were 9 new CWMUs this year for a total of 116 CWMUs for the 2012 season. As proposed, 116, they're broken by region here with 70, 5, 12 in the central, 16 in the southeastern, and 13 in the southern. It covers 2 million acres that are enrolled in the program and 444 private landowners that participate. There are 104 CWMUs that are requested buck deer permits, 61 bull elk, 30 bull moose, 13 buck pronghorn, and 3 requesting turkey permits. We're finding that a lot of the CWMUs that were requesting turkey permits have basically dropped out of the program since we went to over-the-counter sales. This is a breakdown of the number of permits and the species. We have a total of 2,940 for private and 488 public. And that's the recommendations as you see, have them in your packet today. Now I'll go over the regional. The northern region, we have five new CWMUs. They're all deer in the northern region. The Junction Valley is requesting a change in their acreage. They're increasing. They're staying with the same number of permits. In the northeastern region, there are two new CWMUs, the Aviniquin and the Buckhorn Ranch. They're both deer. And then the Skull Valley North CWMU are recommending denial. They do not have enough acreage to be a deer CWMU. They have 3,749. They need to have a minimum of 5,000 acres to be a deer CWMU. They were contacted several times for their plat maps to verify and determine their acreage, and they did not qualify. In the southern region here, we have one new CWMU, the Deer Haven. Southeastern, and then there's the Mini Mod as it had a change in boundary, and the Spring Creek Dodge CWMU also had a change in boundary. Now to the southern region, the New Harmony is a new CWMU for deer and turkey. Johnson Mountain Ranch is a change. They're reducing their deer permits from 27 and 3 to 9 and 1. And the Alton CWMU was requesting an increase in their management buck permits from 4 and 1 to 5 and 1. The division is recommending that they receive 3 and 1. This is based upon the proportion, the size of the CWMU to the proportion of the public permits that are available on that unit, and so it's based upon what they qualify for. Thank you.
Thanks, Boyd. Questions from the RAC? Brian.
Question on the Alton?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just wondering, those guys down there have done a pretty good job managing that. What was their reason for wanting 5 to 1? Is someone here?
Wade's here. We'll get to that. And he's got a comment card.
Okay, maybe we'll
hang on, Wade. Okay. Sam, you got a separate question?
Well, then my question is, why is the recommendation 3 to 1? I'm ignorant to this. So.
Because what we do is we take the overall number of permits that are available to the public, and we take the proportion or the size of the CWMU to the overall unit, so they get a percentage of the permits. And when you take the size of the CWMU versus the size of the unit and then the number of the permits, total permits available to the public, they qualify for 4 permits. Then we break that down in a 90-10 split, and they get 3, and the public gets 1.
Sam.
Okay, my question would be, I've talked to Wade on this. They acquired another 1,240 acres. Was that figured into what you've got here?
Yes.
That was all a part of what you did? Okay.
Yes.
Any other questions from the RAC? Questions from the public? Wade, how you doing?
Good, sir. How are you? Wade Heaton, Alton CWMU. I've talked to a good bit of you already about this, but I just wanted to fill in some of the gaps. First, I apologize for being the only problem child out of 116. I really do. Your meeting's long enough, but I do. There are a few points I want to get across. And the first one is, as Sam brought up, in 2010, matter of fact, the last 2 years, we have gotten 5 management buck permits on the CWMU, 4 private and 1 public. We did increase the acreage on the CWMU this year. We added an additional 1,240 acres. And at any point that we've done that in the past, whether we put acreage in or took acreage out, we adjusted the permit numbers. And 1,240 just didn't justify a trophy permit, but we felt like we were justified in at least asking for a management book permit. And truth of it is, we didn't really care if that went to the public or the private, but we felt like that at least, we at least justified that, adding that much additional acreage into the unit that, that we could manage and utilize for the wildlife. At that point, the division informed me that they were actually recommending one less permit, despite the fact that we were increasing the acreage on the CWMU. And so I am a little bit confused. I understand, you know, their reasoning for doing it, but I am a little confused why the percentage was fine in 2009 and 2010 at five permits, and now suddenly that we've increased more acreage, now the ratio is not fine, and we need to decrease back to four permits. Anyway, I feel like we're doing a good thing on the Alton CWMU. I feel like this management program is a good thing. It's worked well on the Ponsagon. It's worked well on the CWMU, and has given people an opportunity to go in and hunt. We've been able to remove some of those deer, and we've been able to work on that buck to doe ratio a little bit. And that's the whole goal of that management program, is to work on that buck to doe ratio. And we've tried to do our part with the Alton CWMU. So I just ask that, that you'd support us, in that request for, five private and one, public tag for those managements.
Question for you, Wade, from Sam.
How would you feel if they just left it the same as last year?
Well, at this point, I would almost say that would work. I mean, I was a little shell-shocked. We asked for one more, and they asked for one less, despite the acreage. Truthfully, I mean, we're not trying to be greedy. I mean, if it ended up 4-1 again, I'm not going to cry myself to sleep tonight.
Okay, let me ask you another question. And this is just a rumor to me, but my understanding is your 19 trophy permits, you used four of them for management, and you don't necessarily take the trophy deer off the unit with those.
We've actually done that for about 5 years now. And out of those 19 permits, we take five of them and actually harvest management bucks with those. And it's worked out great. I think it's helped our buck-to-doe ratio and has helped some of those less desirable bucks not quite get as old as they normally would have. And so really, yeah, we are asking for an additional on top of those. So we're harvesting, 40% of our total bucks harvested are management bucks.
Go ahead, Brian.
I have a question for you. I love the CWU program. I think that I would personally support the four private and two public, just to give a little more public opportunity down there. I don't know how the rest of the rack, that's probably part of the discussion, but you said you'd be okay with that?
You know, to me, the principle of the matter is, if we're increasing the size of the CWMU, the proportion of permits needs to increase. And so, sure, if it ended up 4-2, I'd be totally happy. The principle of the matter would have been satisfied.
Okay.
Administrative points.
Wade, do you have an idea what percentage of the total deer habitat you have on the Ponsagon unit?
I do.
What is it?
We're roughly, the CWMU itself, well...
The CWMU itself is what percentage?
Are we going to use usable deer habitat or just total pieces of dirt?
Deer habitat, the formula we use to calculate this.
Whether there's deer on it or not, if we use every piece of dirt the deer could walk on, we end up being about 7-ish%, the last time I figured it.
Say it again.
7-ish.
7%. 7%? What percent of the premium tags do you get, do you know?
It's been approximately 10. I mean, that's where it's always been. It's
okay.
About 10.
You know how many management buck tags there were this year?
Yep.
How many?
There were 75 on the Ponsagon and 5 on the CWMU.
What's 7% of that?
No, I'm just going to say it's real close to that.
4. That's exactly the formula we use, ladies and gentlemen. And that's how we figure it out, is based on the percentage of deer habitat that the CWMU has. And we do this with every CWMU in the state. Everyone is allocated tags this same way. And... you know, it's interesting to hear when the property increases, then tax should increase. If you weren't already over-allocated, I would agree with that. But that's where the problem lies, really. And if there's some confusion about why we didn't grant an increase because you increased acreage, it's because you're already over-allocated.
And I totally understand that, Doug. I really do. And I appreciate that point. And I guess the only place I would say I was coming from is we're using tools to set those permit numbers that I think could be more accurate. You know, if we actually sat down and started talking about deer densities and start talking about what percentage does the CWMU bring to the table as far as total benefit to that herd? And deer densities, usable acreage that actually gets used, then I think we're looking at a different discussion and a whole different number. Maybe we're under allocated.
And I couldn't agree with you more, and I suggest that you have the CWMU Association bring that point forward and have that formula adjusted statewide.
That's a good idea.
To that point, the packet has 4.3% of the habitat. For the Alton CWMU, is it 4 or 7? 4.3. Wade's point is you should take quality of habitat and other things into consideration, and we'd have to readdress the rule. Or could address the rule, or could do what their axes fit. But thanks, Wade. Appreciate it. RAC comment, discussion, motion?
I just want to ask, why did we cut a percent why did we give them the extra permit the year before and now cut it now? Why now? I mean, did you use this formula?
If you remember how this came about, in the first year that we had management buck tags on the Ponsonbent unit, the Alton CWMU asked for management buck tags. We declined because it was a new program and we wanted to see how it worked. They went to the Wildlife Board and the Wildlife Board granted them 5 permits. Where they came up with that number, I don't know. But that's how it came to be.
And then we just started using the formula then this year.
Well, we've started actually allocating those permits as per the formula this year to CWMU. So.
I guess I'm a little confused on why, if there's a formula, why do the CWMUs come and request permits? Shouldn't the formula dictate how many permits are given to each CMU, regardless of what they want?
Never hurts to ask.
Well, that's our plan. We use the formula. We calculate those. If we can't come to an agreement with the Cooperative Wildlife Management Unit, based on the formula on those, they're given the opportunity to come here and argue for more than what the others are getting, essentially. So it's your charge to hear those arguments and decide if they have merit. Sometimes the RAC and the Wildlife Board grant CWMUs special deals.
Yep, it boils down to the RAC and Wildlife Board set the rules. The division has to live by them, and the RAC and Wildlife Board can break them. Any other discussion?
No, but I'd like to make a motion.
Go ahead, Cordell.
I'd like to make a motion that we accept as presented by DNR.
Motion by Cordell, seconded by Claire. Any further discussion? Sam.
I think we need to leave the CWMU permits the same as they were in 2011.
Let's vote on the motion on the table.
I'll second that.
Is that an amendment? Is that a motion, Sam?
An amendment to motion.
You guys want to accept that amendment? Yeah, we'll make it. Or you could make it part of your motion. But it.
Well, I'd like to ask a question. What was last year's? 5?
5 total, wasn't it?
4 and 1. 4 and 1. And you was asking for 7 and 1, or. So you're asking for the same as you had last year?
Asking for one more. 4 and 1, he's asking for 5 and 1.
One more private.
No, I don't want to put that in my motion.
No, he doesn't want to make it part of his motion. So we have an amended motion on the floor. To leave it the same as last year, which is not what Wade asked for, but it's a compromise. Yeah. Motion by Sam, seconded by Brian. 4 and 1.
Any discussion on the amendment? Let's vote on the amendment. 4-1. Motion by Sam, seconded by Brian. Those in favor? Hold your hands up. Those against? Passed. Did you get that counted? We better vote again. We've got confusion in those who need to keep us honest. Those in favor again of the amended motion, please signify. Those against? 6-5. The amendment passes. So we need to vote on the original motion now that carries the balance of things, which is the rest of the CWMU package. Those in favor? Any against? That was unanimous. Good job, Boyd.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Now pay close attention. This is a fast one. You'll be out of here in no time.
We won't argue with you.
Okay. Whoops, wrong button. My technology skills are showing here. What do I have to do? Do I go like this? Do I hit escape? No, you touch it. I'm not. Okay, there we go. I'm addressing the Landowner Association voucher recommendations. The division is recommending we receive 15 voucher requests. Our 15 Landowner Association requests. The DWR is recommending approval of all applications as they were received. As I stated, 15 submitted applications for 125 deer, 4 management buck, 93 elk vouchers, and 9 pronghorn vouchers. Thank you.
That is brief. Questions from the rack? Questions from the public? I have no comment cards. It's ours to deal with. We want to make a motion. Lane.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion. We accept the Landowner Association recommendations as presented.
Motion by Lane, seconded by Dale. Any discussion on that motion? Those in favor? Unanimous.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I have no other business this time. What's your other business, Claire?
In other business, I would like to ask the RAC and the Wildlife Board to add to their action log a question from one of my constituents. Is it possible to have a dedicated hunter program for elk? I'd never thought about it. I had no answer for him, but it's something we can think about and maybe look at in the future. That's all.
I have one other comment. And this is just would be more informational. What's being done as far as toxic shot, toxic lead for deer hunting in the areas where the California condor can be located in winter?
Anise, I'm glad you're still here. You want to feel both of those items? I've heard dedicated hunters for elk batted around before. Do you recall any?
We've heard it before. People have asked about it. I don't know how, you know, we would go about doing it. There is really, I guess we could do the three-weapon type thing. I don't administer the dedicated hunter program, so I'd have to, you know, just get a feel of what Rihanna's approach would be to that.
I think, for starters, before we ask the Wildlife Board to put something on the action log, we need a proposal in front of us. And whether the member of the public that contacted you puts that proposal together or someone else,
Yeah, it was a member of the public, one of my
tell him to
constituents that asked me about it, and I hadn't heard about it, and I thought, well, I told him I'd pass it on.
Yeah, let me ask a question, Claire. What is it that you expect back from that request? A presentation at a RAC meeting?
No, just
a letter to you.
That people think about it and maybe say either why it wouldn't work or why it possibly could work, and we could discuss it in the future.
We've discussed it at length, actually, when I sat on the committee that decided what to do with unit by unit, decided what to do with dedicated hunters when we went to unit by unit. One of the proposals was to do away with the dedicated hunter program. One of the other proposals was to make it an elk dedicated hunter program. The problem with that is there's no incentive for people to join a dedicated elk hunting program. Tags are over the counter. They do sell out, but it's not till the end. And, you know, the primary draw for the dedicated hunter program is and always will be the guaranteed tag for deer that are difficult to get otherwise. Without that draw, it would be difficult to get people to commit to the extra work. People are free to come volunteer their time at the Division of Wildlife anytime they want to help wildlife. They don't have to be in one of these programs, but I'm not sure. I think the reason that it hasn't been proposed or that it probably wouldn't fly if it were to be proposed is that the administrative costs of keeping a totally separate system would far outweigh any benefit that a limited number of participants would gain from that. I think that's the problem.
The one thing I would add to that, Doug, and I agree that the biggest draw is the guaranteed tag. Also, very high on the importance list is being able to hunt all three hunts.
Sure. Yeah,
that would be the draw.
Yeah, increased opportunity would be the draw, and I'm not sure what the draw would be with elk. What increased opportunity? You could hunt, you could hunt all three seasons with elk. But I'm not sure how big of an issue that would be.
I don't either. I know that I would like to hunt more than just the rifle elk hunt when I can't find one, and I know they herd back up for the muzzleload hunt.
Well, put in for a cow tag.
And the way these are usually handled, if it does go on the action log for the Wildlife Board, is they would ask Rihanna to look into it. She would gain some statistics and come back with a recommendation whether she would want to go forward. Cost-benefit analysis, all that would be done by her program. So, that's usually how action items work, if that's what the RAC wants to, the way the RAC
wants. I'll pass that on to him, and if he wants to pursue it, he can.
Okay. Now, as far as the non-toxic shock, so the past couple of years, what we've been doing is trying to guess which hunters are hunting those areas, because as we know, well, we know how many hunt the Ponsignan, but the design unit was encompassed in the southern region RAC. So what we have done in the past is, through the drawing, try to find out what folks do hunt the, so we ask them a question when they're putting it for a drawing, will you hunt the Zion unit? And then we gather that list and send them all a letter with a voucher to redeem, I think, for $20 off non-toxic shock. So it's basically it's an incentive program. It's not a mandatory thing. So as we go to unit by unit, this will become easier. We will know who drew permits for those units. And on the Ponsignan and the Zion unit, we would actually target those people specifically and give them that opportunity to try to get $20 off of if they buy a non-toxic shot.
Okay, and just for a point of interest, the organization that I represent isn't interested in banning toxic shot. They understand that there's a unique balance between wildlife and sportsmen and the preservation of wildlife, and they are for those sportsmen dollars increasing their opportunity to view wildlife. And they wanted me just to pass along that they really appreciate what everybody is doing for the sport and for the continuation of extending, you know, the opportunity to see and to view and to be a non-consumptive user of that. So I just wanted to pass that along, and I'll pass this information back. Thank you.
Mike.
With regards to the condor, in fact, I'm working on this for the county right now because we're they've got a 5-year review that they, that the Fish and Wildlife Service have to answer to. The condor is a non-essential experimental population, meaning they don't carry any specific regulations that the states have to abide by, but as mentioned, that it is appreciated probably that you use non-toxic shot because they do consume animals that are shot, and that's probably one of the bigger mortalities that these birds have, and heaven forbid that we get them as a endangered species because then we'd be, have problems. But anyway, that's basically where they, where it stands.
Any other discussion tonight? Accept a motion to adjourn. Motion by Cordell.
I'll second that.
Second by Claire.